Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
We are in the building. We got something special for y'all. It's for the city. This is the G Podcast, where we focus on family, friends, finances, freedom, and our future, and everything else. This is the G Podcast. Tonight we are live, and we got the one and only Brandon Douglas, first on the pod to wear Prada. Let's get right to it. Yes, indeed. Like, one more time for the first rocking the Prada. This is the G Podcast, where we focus on family, friends, finances, freedom, and our future, and everything else. Brandon, thank you so much for joining us.
Appreciate you for having me, G. But this is a full circle moment, man. I just kind of think you didn't cuss about 8 times already in the intro. Yeah, but thanks for having me, man. We go back at least, 25 years? One of the first friends I made in 6th grade. This should be a good time. Once again, excited to talk to you, keep it real, and kind of talk about where we are today. What is it? Family, finances, freedom, our future. And what else? That F word?
You got one. So family, friends, finances, freedom, and our future. Yeah,
I think we can hit on all of those today.
No doubt. And you already mentioned 6th grade was when we originally sort of crossed paths, but probably wasn't until get this where we actually started to mingle in the same circles and whatnot. So I'm curious, just from your point of view, what I remember when I first met you in terms of just who I remember you to be at that time. Like, I'd be curious, what do, if anything, you remember about me when you first met me?
Man, a couple things. I think the first day I met you, the first thing I remember, neither one of us have hair now, and mine is thin and yours is definitely gone. I remember the way.
I remember the waves, but
I also remember, man, you were a big Duke Blue Devils fan. But my house was divided because my little brother was a huge Blue Devils fan, and I was a UNC fan. And then our best friend at the time, Brittany, she was also a Tar Heels fan, and y'all used to ball a lot. I wasn't athletically gifted, but one thing I could do, like Stephen A., is I woke up every morning to ESPN, to SportsCenter. Remember? My way of battling y'all, since I couldn't battle on the court, was talk that sports shit every day at the lunch table with you. But I remember the ways, the Duke Blue Devil t-shirt you had on that was dingy.
It surely wasn't Prada, that's for damn sure. It was not a Prada tee, that's for sure.
Yeah, I won't wear a Prada then either.
But so, okay, so. Prada. But see, this is what I was saying about you. You, it's no surprise that I sit here in front of you today and you are styled the way you're styled, because even back then you were definitely someone who, this is back when I used to look at kids who wore Old Navy, like, man, those kids got it made. They got Old Navy. You had the Old Navy, you had the Tommy, you had the Nautica, you had like all the.
Well, it's funny you say that, man, because like we grew up in the, I think similarly to like our same family structure, single parent, or my mom didn't raise me, but my grandma and then my aunt stepped in when my grandma died. Excuse me. But I guess the reason why I think I was always put together, man, is because we always, I don't want to say we tested into the good schools because they were public, but we were shipped, right? So when you think about the zoning of like where we live from the West End, right, we went to Githens and then we went to Jordan, right? Mm-hmm. And those zip codes that kind of aligned to Githens, either you had or you didn't, right? Mm-hmm. At Jordan, either you had or you didn't. The way of leveling the playing field for me is I didn't have the money. But the one thing that they couldn't take away from me is I wanted to look the part and I wanted to speak the part. So my way of leveling the field was to outdress them motherfuckers and to be smarter than motherfuckers. Even though if I ain't have it, you weren't going to tell me I ain't have it. And then we took all the same classes as all the privileged kids. I wanted to make sure also that we was leveling the field. I was leveling the field by being the top in the class too. So that was my way of just kind of like leveling the playing field and just make sure they knew who BLD was.
So let me ask, like, because you have always sort of been this very ambitious, prideful, I would say competitive.
Competitive. Yes.
I'm curious, like, why do you think you've always been so competitive as it relates to style, grades, achievements overall, I would say? I think you enjoy being a high achiever. Would you agree or disagree with that?
I agree. And I'm man enough and I've done enough therapy to know where that stems from, right? Mm. Ultimately, I'm the first from my family to go to college. I'm the oldest of three. Mom was a felon. Dad wasn't really around. At the end of the day, the ethos that I put upon myself and put upon my shoulders for me and my little brother and my little sister was to be the first out, right? And never to go into leaderhood and never go back. And when I think about my friends, my two best friends, Jordan and Trey, like, they were athletes, right? I just didn't have it. I just didn't have it. I'm a scrawny kid from the West End. Once again, if I couldn't beat you on the court, I was going to beat you in the classroom. And if I could beat you in the classroom, which I was probably going to beat you in the classroom, I was going to beat you when it came to dressing, right? I always just wanted to control the narrative. And the way that I controlled the narrative was the classroom and then my dress and my appearance. Because I didn't have the God-given ability to play sports. I still don't. I can work out. I'm a little fat right now. But So that's a could sing. That's my thing. I was a chorus. I was a thing. Yo, do you remember that song I wrote for Olivia? Yeah, man, but going back, man. The whole episode, man, but really, I've been competitive because I wanted to make it out, but I also realized that me making it out wasn't just enough, right? I had to make sure that me and my little brother and my little sister was making it out. I put that on my shoulders, and we made it out.
Mm-hmm. You described the household. Do you mind just sharing like what the circumstances were that eventually caused you to end up being raised by your grandmother ultimately?
Once again, I take so much pride and power in my story. It's funny, I was at an offsite a couple years ago or a year or two ago, and the senior vice president at the time went around and was kind of talking about the family business, right? The family business. And he got choked up because he was now the SVP. And when his dad died, he died as the SVP. So him becoming an SVP was just kind of like a paramount moment in his career. He shared that story to kind of ground an ice-breaking moment. And he asked everyone to go around and kind of talk about, like, where are you right now? It was a bunch of leaders in the room in tech. I was the only one that looked like me. But what was the family business and how did you get here? And everybody was going around. One of my homies' father was a CEO of a Fortune 500 who took it public and sold it, made well into 7-8 figures off that sale. House in the Hamptons, a house in Santa Barbara. All my friends were just going around. And I said, y'all, my family business was the drug business. Mm-hmm. That was the family business for me, right? And I used to carry so much shame with that. But I think about, like, my uncle, my mom's oldest brother, Uncle Mike. Man, he was the king with this. He was the biggest drug dealer from Virginia down to Atlanta. That's when you kind of got into BMF and all of that, right? And my mom was kind of like his COO. She kind of helped run the business. And I used to carry so much shame because where we went to school, people's parents were doctors, lawyers. I remember Mike Sanchez's dad was the president, the chief operating officer of Duke Hospital. Remember that? Like,
yo, I gotta interject and just say that, like, going to Jordan High School, when we went to Jordan High School, I knew that there were kids there who had some money, and I would see the neighborhoods we would pass driving into the school, right?
Yeah. I didn't realize how much money they had.
Yeah, I didn't realize nothing like the magnitude of some of the people we were around in terms of like their parents and what they were doing in the city. I really didn't realize how many of their kids were at Jordan.
I didn't realize it either, man, until I got to college and I would say going to Morehouse, seeing black students and black men who parents did the same thing also kind of changed the game for me. But I didn't realize the magnitude of the amount of money or wealth we went to school with. What right. I did know though is them motherfucking houses was huge.
Yeah. Yeah. It was cool. We went with somebody with a nice house. It was like, oh,
right. Yeah. Right. Facts. And had a pool in the backyard and it wasn't the community pool, right? Right. Otherwise, going back though, my mom was in the drug business. My uncle was in the drug business. And when shit came collapsing down, man, like they took everything. And that's when I knew, you talking about competitive. I remember, I don't know if you remember this morning, but I remember standing at the bus stop, sixth grade, dawn, the sun had just come up or was just coming up. And I don't know if like Tyler Perry or Oprah scripted this shit. We'll talk about Oprah later because she kind of made it possible for me to go to college. I couldn't, as the bus was pulling up to the bus stop, I swear for God, 14 to 15 Suburbans was pulling up in front of the bus, going to my house, getting ready to raid the house to get my mom to take her to jail. Wow. We had the police, the feds, the helicopter swarming. And they was like, Brandon, they at your house. I was like, no, they ain't at my house. I'm knowing now. Like, yeah, they there. You know what I'm saying? And I remember this girl, God, she gonna be in the store anyway when I do my TED talk. Chantel Hall was like, Brandon, they at your house. They going to get your mom. I was like, they not going to get my mom. I remember looking at Chantel Hall and she told the whole school when I got there. But I remember that. I made up in my mind in sixth grade that that will never happen again, right? That would never, I would never be to the point where I am so embarrassed by the circumstances of life where I refuse to own whatever is happening in that moment, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, they were going to my house. The reason why I now take pride in that story because I think about the hustle, the grit, the fortitude, the entrepreneurial spirit that my mama and my uncle had. Yes, it affected a lot of people's lives, but they were also a product of their own environment, right? And the business that they know was passed down to them. And they were just trying to make it out in their own way, shape, form, or fashion as well. So when my mom went to prison, my mom's mom, my grandma Joyce, who kind of was already the matriarch of the family and raising us, given kind of my mom's occupation, she was kind of already raising me, my brother, and my sister. But when my mom went to prison, my grandma Joyce kind of really just stepped in and started raising me, Dasan and Tanisha.
Oh, this is one. I appreciate you sharing that story, and in large part because one of the things I do want to do with this podcast long term is be a bridge for individuals from circumstances like you just described, and providing resources that help get them closer to career paths where they can professionalize their skill sets that they're just naturally sort of born with due to their environment, due to circumstances out of their control.
Right.
A lot of young folks who come up in circumstances are prepared to do high level sales, especially in the enterprise software space. I didn't even know about software sales until I was of a certain age and was definitely late to the party. But definitely, someone like yourself, well, that skill set was developed and nurtured due to your circumstances. And we'll speak to how that helped you advance throughout. But it's a prime example of stuff I've said on prior episodes that these conditions almost curate the skill set necessary to thrive. But
it is the breeding ground. The growing up in the hood is the breeding ground for ultimately having to overcome challenges, right? Reposition the messaging so that you are now putting yourself in a better situation, right? To change the outcome. Yes, I just kind of think about like when a client gives me a no, how I can now go and reposition,
right, or
pivot the conversation. Similarly, what I was doing at the bus stop that morning when they, Brandon, they at your house. No, they ain't at my house. I know they're somewhere else. Like, how y'all saying? Like, but right, just being able to think on my feet at that, yeah, at that time to position. Or throwing somebody else under the bus. No, that ain't me. You know what I'm saying? But like, yeah, but yeah, definitely, man. Growing up in the hood, I would say, is the ultimate training ground, if you will, for anyone that needs to be in a, if you're in a high pressure situation, or if your job demands you to pivot, to think of different scenarios on the fly, to maybe reposition the message or the cert, the hood is definitely a breeding ground for that.
So much rejection and adversity on a daily basis when you live in that environment. And you need to be able to have the callousness or the fortitude to deal with that in these high pressure, high performing roles. You grew up on the West End of Durham. Like, for people listening, how would you describe what it was like growing up on the West End?
So, man, it's weird. I have two different views or lenses that I look at, right? It's the West End that the newspaper and the news wrote about and talked about. And it's the West End that I live, right? West End is the cornerstone of Duke University, right? They talk about really the crime rate, right? The drugs, but literally on the edge of the West End, flanked on both parts of the West End, you have the East and the West campus of Duke University, one of the top universities in the world, just not in the United States, right? But I also kind of think, so yes, there was drugs, there was gangs. My family was responsible for a lot of the drugs, at least half of my life before my uncle, my mom was arrested by the feds. Regardless of what was depicted on the news in the newspaper, there was a strong sense of community as well, right? I kind of think about everybody was a cousin on the West End, right? Somehow, some form, some shape, everybody was related. I think about really that my saving grace was church, right? My two best friends, Jordan and Trey, they were given to me or gifted to me out of First Calvary Baptist Church. Really, although I wasn't an athlete, it wasn't a choice. I still played recreational sports with the church league, baseball and basketball. I couldn't shoot, but I had tremendous defense. Tyronn Lue today. There was this dichotomy where like, or really the West End to me was taught me how to be the master of duality, right? Mm. I had the street smarts because I had to be able to navigate. I was once again a strawny kid skipping down the street, doing ballet and gymnastics on the sidewalk, right? But I also knew how to fight, but also it prepared me when I was going into these schools, right? Jordan and Githens, to not let somebody outperform me, right? And to talk my way. We'll get to high school, man, but like it is not natural now that I think about it that a kid coming from the West End should have been homecoming king, SGA president, most popular, voted most likely to succeed, all of that stuff. But I really say that I was prepared and given the confidence because of my surroundings. I didn't know it then, but the West End really
created a monster.
What? Yeah. Yeah.
It created a monster.
Yeah. And so when people say put that shit on, I'm not really talking about the material. When I say put that shit on, it's a mentality that I had to walk out of the house with every day to really first be what I needed to be for my brother, my sister, my auntie, my grandma, but also at the time to convince myself that I was that guy when I didn't believe at the time that I was the guy because of where I came from. So put that shit on to me is a mentality. It's not really a material thing. Because I was putting it on every day I was walking out. I just made that up on the spot. That was good, though. That was real good.
All right, man. We'll give it up. We'll give it up, man. We'll give it up. It was.
Yeah, I was just thinking about this. We've been friends since 12. We now 35, 36. So 25 years. How the hell are we going? It's going to take us an hour to get through Githens.
It's going to be, we'll just see how things go. You know, like I said, and so for those listening, like this will definitely be a multi-part discussion because so much to cover here. And it's such a great story as well. I have to say the authenticity of the story and knowing from where it started, like you described growing up in the West End, you grew up across from my uncle and cousins, as a matter of fact, as we discovered as I was dropping you off for the first time, like, oh, this is where you stay.
Can I just shout out your mom? Who,
of course.
Who, to me, so we didn't have a family car. Me and G typically did a lot of after school activities. Once again, I tried to play sports, even though I wasn't good. But all of like the ancillary clubs and stuff that we were a part of, since you lived around the corner, your mom just dropped me off. I just stopped asking. I just got in the car. And so I just wanted to say thank you to her for just always looking out for me. How's she doing these days? She's doing well?
She's doing very well, man. She's doing well. I don't want to put all her business out there, so I don't want to say too much. But no, she's definitely doing well. Ma, I'm going to clip this up, make sure I tag you so you see it. But Brandon definitely wants to thank you and is grateful for those rides from school.
I'm so grateful.
Word up. When we talk about that moment in sixth grade, and that really sort of like shifted or lit a fire in you to sort of like start carving out this person that we know to be today. You'd also mentioned that you were skipping and doing gymnastics down the street. So I'm curious, right? Like, how did you not just pursue fine arts, but really like embrace it and dive in? while still being in a community, especially where at the time that might be like eyebrow raised or frowned upon, especially given the environment.
So if you go back to, like you say, like describe the West End, that's why I say like there's a, the West End to me presented or was the massive duality in terms of like, all I knew was community, right? Like I was always encouraged to be who I was at the earliest of ages. While my homeboys was out playing basketball in the streets, I was watching Oprah, watching Michelle Kwan win the gold medal at the Olympics. I'm being serious. Dominique Dawes.
I watched right? Dominique Dawes
winning the 96 Olympics in Atlanta, Georgia. I have just always just been a different kid. And I think it goes back to just me also like not being good at the things that they wanted me to be good at, right? Mm-hmm. Like I just could not. I was decent at baseball. I was one of a shortstop. I ain't even gonna lie. But like, I'm 5'7" and a half, 5'8" on a good day, depending on the shoe. I just was not a athletically inclined kid, but I could dance. I love Shakespeare. And I think I found it because that was the only thing that I was, if I wasn't good at sports, I had to stay after school. Right. So I was going to find something. And it was just theater and dance that really found me.
What were some of those early programs, though? Because, like being in that neighborhood and also, like, not having a lot of resources to access certain things, like, what were some of the opportunities? Can you speak to them or do you remember what they were?
That's not my narrative, right? Like, my resources, like, I went to E.K. Poe, I went to Moorhead Montessori. So they always had programming during and after school that provided a safe haven for me, my brother, and my sister, right? And so Delson and Tanisha were great athletes. I wasn't, but I liked the dance program. So I would go the Walltown Children's Theater really was a beacon of light for me that really got me into it. I think at sixth grade, we did Shakespeare through the eyes of a middle schooler, right?
Does it still exist? The Walltown joint?
It still exists. I actually just got elected to the board.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I actually just got elected to the board. And so for those listening, make sure that you look out and look at some of the productions that the Walltown Children's Theater is doing in the greater Durham area. But that was my outlet. But the programming was made available at the schools. But also, even for those who didn't stay after school, Durham Parks and Recreations also played a huge part in my life.
Oh, wow.
Because Lyon Park, the West End Community Center, that was all funded or sourced through Durham Parks and Recreations. A lot of the opportunities came from that.
So let's just highlight why, and a good example of why it is important that we as a city still provide these things to the community, because they do provide opportunities, access to things that you might not necessarily get access to if it's not through the school or through the local park. Like, that's
nothing else. I will say access and exposure to come from the inner city. I remember my first time going to see a ballet at the Carolina Theater and an opera. I was just blown away at the production. Dancers are athletes as well, right?
Yeah.
The agility, how strong the men were at the time to like throw someone up in the air and catch her, right? Like with one hand. That was and I was like, okay, well, if I can't shoot a ball, I probably could do something like that. But it was just exposure to know that, okay, I didn't have to fit into a mold, especially if I didn't have the skill set or the competency to do it, right? As I head into this parenting journey, I'm not a parent yet. That is the type of partner and parent I want to be, is that I don't really want to guide my child, right, or my children down a lane or down a path that they either have no interest or they don't have a skill set, right? And I believe that you have to coach them to be, okay, if you start something, let's finish it. But I just wanted to shout out my family, especially my Grandma Joyce and my Aunt Brenda, who really just gave me the space and gave me the agency to really be who I was. And I just want to repeat that again. It's as important as people, as parents, as partners, and as friends, that we give people the space and the agency to show up how they show up, because that is really how they begin to develop and lean into the person that they're supposed to be. And gee, I'll shout you out too, man. Like, let's just call it what it was. I was probably the weirdest friend at the time that you had in high school and middle school, because I did none of the shit that none of you and your homeboys did, but you're like, this is my Brandon. Yeah. So it won't no surprise when you look up at 25 and I'm introducing y'all to my man. Like, you're like, you would, like, I was waiting on you to tell me.
Yo, like, we're not going to just skip everything, but I do want to fast forward. Do you remember when me and Brittany was driving to Dallas? She was relocating to Dallas at the time, and you was in Birmingham, and we stopped in Birmingham. Do you remember that stop at all?
Gee, oh, my God. I remember you guys visiting now. I forgot all about that. Yes, I remember y'all now visiting Birmingham, but
it was mad quick. It was in and out. It was like... Okay. We were driving to Dallas. We didn't even stay the night. We got dinner, and I think we ended up staying somewhere random in Mississippi or something on the way to Dallas. But
okay, recant the story, please.
So that was the trip in which you told me that you were, in fact, interested in men for the first time. That uh-huh. Up until then, you had never told me that.
Brittany knew, though, right?
Brittany had known, but you had never told me that.
Did you know before I told you?
Brittany didn't tell me, nah.
Okay, so how did I do it? I don't remember.
You see, I can't say. I can't even say exactly, but I'll just say that.
Why can't you say, do you not remember or what?
Nah, because I don't want to make it too messy. But I don't want to make it too messy.
Wait. Yeah.
All I'm going to say is...
How do you not do it in a messy fashion?
Like, you told me that, like, not only, like, are you, like...
Nope. I don't like it. I don't like where it's going. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yo, oh, I'm just going... No. All right, so look, man, look. Man, you a wild boy, man. You a wild boy, man.
I don't like what you're about to say. Nope. All right, where were we? Sixth grade, and where were we at? Seventh grade again.
Oh, so on the other side of that. Now, so this is the thing, because I bring that point up because there's another point in our friendship where the infamous three-way era was a thing. Not three-way like pause, like menages. I'm talking about like you call somebody, dial up on three-way, the other person just be on mute. You don't know somebody on the phone. Like that was a very common thing at one point in the social sphere.
That was me, you, and Brittany.
That was a very common thing in middle school, or maybe it was high school. There was a point where maybe at some point in a friend group, I might have suggested that you weren't straight, and you got wind of it, and you got really mad at me, and you came to me like you wanted to fight.
Oh, I was getting ready.
Do you remember that?
I do. I remember that. The reason why first, I was upset that you chose to say it to someone else first without saying it to me. But secondly, like, man, first, this is early 2000s, right? So the era that we're living in now, it's not the era that we're living in, that we were living in back then. But also, we are in Durham, North Carolina. And although we are a progressive city, the city of medicine, we're also a southern city and a very regressive city at that time. And like I said, right, the cornerstone or one of my pillars when I think about the man that I am today and still am is my religion. And yes, although I've now been religiously liberated and I am not shackled to the repressive theologies that I was taught growing up, if you will. Yeah, man, I hadn't really come to terms with, Brandon might be straight, but like, I didn't even lose my virginity to a man or a woman, but to a woman until I was like 18 or 19. For someone to really sexualize or to speak of my orientation, and I had not even like begin to really dive into the man that I was, regardless of how I presented, right? Like, that was a lot, right? I'm not holding you hostage to that at the time, but like, that was not your story to tell, although you were right. But I think you got to set it up that way. You were given the three-way conversation. I heard you say it. I didn't get wind. I was on the phone when you said it.
Okay, word.
Yeah, so
word,
I was muted word. When you was talking. Yeah.
Wait, so, you came off mute, as a matter of fact, if I remember this correct. You actually I'm off three-way now.
I don't think I come off mute. I'm gonna see you tomorrow. And I was waiting at your locker.
Oh,
and
the reason why,
and this goes back to giving people the space and the agency. And I would say the kids are well equipped now, right? But man, and this one probably ninth grade, but this is probably like 10th or 11th. And I think I was talking to girls, right? And like I had crushes and whatever. And I didn't even explore my sexuality in terms of same gender loving until 2021. I will say though, G, you was like my two best friends at Jordan were you and Brittany. Yes, I'm okay with you. Maybe if you would have asked me, I probably still would have said no, because I didn't know at the time. I was denying it. I didn't have the tools to process it. But you was my hitter, so I'm like, if he's speculating, Jordan and Trey don't go to Jordan, right? Jordan at Hillside, Trey at Southern, and they was also like on a not an apology tour, but they was defending me because once again, I'm this thespian walking on my tiptoes. I was wearing, right. Y'all wearing jerseys. I just want for the record, it is now cool for these cats to be in skinny jeans.
Right, right.
And wear pink and wearing Argyle when Argyle sweaters were back in at the dime. Lacoste. I was doing that
before college dropout, you was already on that sort of wave of stuff. You were. I have to give it up.
And I got to give a shout out to my Aunt Sky because she was like onto some stuff like that. Or just like be you. But I just didn't look like any cat that you was hanging out with. So I get it. But he was riding with me. So I'm like, so why are you talking about me? But it just didn't know. You just didn't know.
Yo, so I think
it turned out. No. And it turned out that you are a gay magnet because your two best friends in high school turned out to be raging queers.
Raging. My wife is a magnet as well. So here's the thing, right? I think it's important to have this say revisionist talk because it, as I look back at that time, I didn't know what to do either. Like you said, it was early 2000s. It was like even the way that like terminology was used and phrases that were appropriate then that aren't appropriate now. Like a lot has changed in that 20 some odd year time period. A lot more educated as it relates to like what's acceptable, what's not. And in present day, you don't ask anybody that question, arguably, right? Nobody's question to ask, but from a friend to friend standpoint, I think it is something that the straight black male demographic is in a interesting place as it relates to like just asking questions.
Back then or now?
Even now, I think, but I would argue.
But this is the thing that
now too, though, but in a different way.
Well, no, I think it's okay to ask someone how they identify, right? What's your proper pronoun, right? I have to do it in corporate mirror all the time. And you're not asking someone's position. You're asking them their orientation. You can't hold yourself hostage to not knowing. You can't hold yourself hostage to not knowing, but you also have to give yourself space to figure it out if you want to know. Right. If you are friends with someone, or if you do life with someone, or if you're working with someone, it's casual conversation to ask where someone went to school. Are you married? Right. All right. How many times do people say, are you married? Right. Do you have
Right. Do you have kids? Right. Okay,
let's do a follow up to that. Are you married, G? Are you married? Gerald, are you married?
I say.
Okay. Are you married to a man or a woman? What? Like the reason why we weaponize the silence because no one wants to have the courageous conversation. But that is the conversation you have to ask. You ask someone where are they from? Where did you go to school? Do you have kids? Are you married? What, you just can't assume that if someone is married, that they're married to the opposite sex. Yeah. Especially in corporate spaces. And I'm not saying corporate spaces like corporations. I'm talking about general spaces where everyone shows up are giving the space to show up themselves. The reason why it's uncomfortable is because people don't have the tools to have the conversations. Like I say, marriage is courageous, parenting is courageous, being a friend is courageous, right? And being a colleague is courageous. Like all those things are not places for cowards, right? And if you want to be the best of your, like the best employee or the best friend or like the best parent, you can't be a coward. And that's a way that you can do that without being offensive. You want to know. And you should always seek clarity if you want to establish a connection. Now, at 15, I would argue that you was putting some stuff on me that I didn't even have the tools, or none of us had the tools to really even work through.
Yeah, I didn't know what the I was talking about at 15. Like, I mean, yeah, to be
but
fair.
But you knew I walked on my tiptoes and I like Shakespeare. Yeah, that is different, right? But I got nieces, oh. I got god kids that are like, I get that.
Boy.
But if nothing else, I think that like we gotta stop weaponizing the unknown because of our unfamiliarity.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should try it next time that you're trying to establish. Now you're a recluse outside of this podcast stuff. But if you're really trying to get to know someone or establish some type of alliance or acquaintance, right? Because you ain't really, you probably don't do no more new friends. But are you married?
I do new friends.
I think the follow up should be, okay, where'd you go to school? Are you married? And if that's a yes, okay, then try this one. Is that to a man or a woman? That is fair.
My glasses
look crooked on. Sorry, guys.
That's the asymmetry of your head.
Okay, because it looked like.
That's just the asymmetry of your one of your ears is lower than the other.
I'm just trying to figure out. I'll keep that. But I say all of that to say, man, that is real though, G. Like,
yeah.
You gotta just have the next follow up should be if there you just can't assume like sexuality doesn't have you can be very gay and be very masculine and you can be very straight and be very feminine from a male perspective and vice versa, right? But also there's these schemes and it's a continuum now. You don't even have to choose, and that's okay.
I don't want to put you in a position where you're speaking for a community, but I would like to ask
from my space. I'm speaking from my vantage point and my lens, right?
So I would like to ask a question.
Okay.
Like what does it mean? Like what's the difference between being from your perspective of being queer versus gay versus bi? Like what is makes queer different?
I ain't had enough wine yet.
Okay, because I just want to know what that word. I hear it a lot. You mentioned that my two friends were.
I think that's gonna be episode 2 or 3. No, I am not queer. I mean, yes, I am a part of the queer community. Well, that was me trying to be completely correct. I am. Listen, I am in love and married to a man. Okay, I don't. My pronouns is he, him, that. All right. I don't do, I'm not they or them. Now I respect they and them. I have friends. I am friends with they and them and we. There are people that also show up as we or persons that show up as we. But for me in my house, I am with a him and a he, and I am he and him and that. Okay. That's all I got for you.
He not that either?
He is.
Okay. So, all right. We'll get back to that at a later time, but I do think.
Can you turn up the air?
I do think it is important for black males to have the ability to ask questions without it seeming like they're coming from a phobic place or an ostracizing, like people don't know. And I think a lot of people also want to get it right, but can't even ask the questions comfortably to make sure like things are in the right order, if you will. So
So for me, though, I will say I agree with everything you just said, but I don't lead, like, especially the older I've gotten and the more success I've gained. I'm in spaces where unless I choose to share, people don't know. And when I do tell them, sometimes it's a surprise. And I think it's because, especially when I'm meeting guys, I want them to really, colleagues, new friends, if I'm a part of the 100 Black Men of Atlanta, the Emerging 100, at the end of the day, I enjoy all of the things that you probably typically enjoy on a Sunday. We just had the US Open. Like, I'm watching golf. I watch football. I watch sports. I think that you have to, yes, straight men, cisgender men should be okay, should be given the grace to ask questions. But are you asking questions to judge, or are you asking questions to understand? It's similar to kind of like what I've been coached on in therapy in relationships. Are you listening to respond? Or are you listening to understand? Right. Mm-hmm. I think, yes, you can ask questions, but are you asking to be nosy? Are you asking for judgment? Are you asking really for clarity? You know what I'm saying? And to understand. Because similar to, since we talking about future and family and friends, similar to like, gee, you're not attracted to every woman you see, and you don't want to sleep with every woman. There's this common misconception that if you are gay, that whoever you are, whatever your preference is for that gender, that you're going to now just want to hit and sleep with everyone that is the gender that you're attracted to. Or gay or lesbian. I'm just saying, so, you know what I'm saying?
No, no, so like, but I'm about to say, like, but there are some niggas who will bang every chick if given the opportunity to bang.
And there's probably some guys that are that will take down. Yes, but a majority of those people, but the majority probably is not. There's standards in place.
Facts.
Big, I ain't even. What you sipping on, though, brother?
Oh, I'm sipping on a little whiskey, man. Shout out. So, thanks for bringing it up, man. We already know what we on, man.
Is that the Old Hillside?
Man, we shouting out Old Hillside all day, every day, man. Make sure y'all go get that local ABC. They got a new joint coming out here soon, shortly, but we shouting out Old Hillside.
Is that one of the original bottles? Is that bottle of, like...
When they first dropped the Centennial bottles... They were signed a few, so I did crack one open that I got signed, but I didn't crack open the other one that I got signed. So I'm saying this is the one that I didn't get signed. But shout out to
Jordan.
Signed.
Gave me some. That's pretty strong, brother. You sipping it neat,
my brother. Cheers.
I might need a refill soon.
No issues.
Right. So let's get back though. High school. So I remember coming off of mute. it was just messy the way that happened, and trying to see you. And I don't think I did come see you at the locker, and he's like, Brandon, like, man, like, what are you doing? Like, you gonna fight me for asking a question? You was low key trying to sum me in laughing. Like, I do remember the disrespect. Like, is he thinking about it? Like, what do you think you ought to do?
I was wondering what you thought he was about to do. Like, it would have been an instant turnout, I have to say.
Looking back though at high school, bro, we could have been reality stars. Laguna Beach, right?
High school was an interesting time, man. I don't know if people understand, like, growing up the way we grew up, we were outside without a lot of supervision, if you will. Like, we were able to be out late, explore, make it home. You know what I'm saying? Like, we definitely experienced quite a bit of high school. I'm curious, just for you, going to a high school like Jordan, like you mentioned, with it, when it comes to the type of students that go because of the neighborhood and the zip codes that go to the school, like, what were just some of your top memories being at Jordan?
Man, I remember my top was when an SGA president.
Why? Why does that stick out to you over other things?
I just don't. The Carson, I don't think I was supposed to win. I knew I was going to win. When I think about it and I just sit back, I'm like, damn, like, a kid from the West End was literally one of the most popular students at that school. You know what I'm saying? Like, all of this shit, it was just like, so it was winning that. I remember all y'all was campaigning for me. I remember that. That's different from being senior class president. The school had to vote for me. You know what I'm saying? And for me to win, like, by a landslide, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think that's when it just hit, like, yeah, I got it. I got something special. I got that sauce. Another thing that I remember is us all going to prom.
Prom.
Oh, my. Prom. And I remember project graduation. Remember that? Downtown. Right. But some of my favorite memories outside of, like, just kind of like us hanging out at Chandler's house, right?
Those are some memories.
Olivia's spot.
Yeah.
At Brittany's spot. I just, like, we had to create our own community at Jordan, kind of, because although everyone was nice, we were not, we were not the profile of that school. Think about it, right? Like, we weren't, right? You got Hope Valley, you got Woodcroft, you got some of Tarboro and Chapel Hill, South Point. South Point was, I remember
right now,
South
yeah,
Point
a lot opening. Of people had driveways, facts.
Big ones.
Garages and everything.
Six, you know, 5-6 car garages. And once again, man, like, and this is not a brag at all, and I probably please edit this out when I'm going to say it. Like, look like that won't no that's not no money now. You know what I'm saying, like
wow. Oh boy, you know, it's but,
but it was way more than what we had and what our family had. You know what I'm saying, like, gee, well, first of all, you got a car. I didn't even get a car. I didn't even get licensed. So I was probably 21, but I remember, like, you had the Corolla, but that was cats was the Cor- it was Corolla, right?
I had the Corolla. Yeah, I had the Honda and the Corolla.
The Corolla. The Corolla is what I remember. It was cats coming to school with Saabs.
BMWs. Yeah.
The new Saturns. But somebody had the money. This is the car of our childhood, the Passat.
Oh yeah, that Passat.
Yeah, if you had a new Passat,
that was like a great first starter car. Yeah, that's a fact.
You was getting to that money.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They, that was a status symbol back in the day. And then another thing that I remember is, so I don't remember if you remember, is it J.J. Bean? So there was this phase kind of before sneakers, because sneakers now, the Yeezys, but at Jordan, this is how pressed I was and how much money we did not have. Do you remember everyone used to get their initials tattooed or on their book bags? They were like, the, right?
The embroidery.
The embroidery. The embroidery, right? There was this girl. She was probably like top five. Her initials, my initials are BLD. Bartlett, Laro. Hers was CBL. And she had gotten a new book bag. And I asked if I could have her previous one. And I'm like, I'm just sitting back and thinking, like, I really carried that blue back bag. Because I had two of the initials. I had, because her name was Karina Bartlett Laro, and I was Brandon L. Douglas. So I had the B and the L. When people were asking me to see, I was like, it's a second part of my hyphenated middle name.
Yo, that's crazy. That's the importance of your book bag in that era was something different too. Cause
it
like
status symbol,
yeah,
bro.
It was, the type of book bag you had mattered. Like every little thing in high school, like it is like thinking back to that, to those days, like all those little things were status
symbols.
You don't
remember the mechanical pencils, but also you had money if you had the erasable pen.
Yeah.
Remember in English, you had to write in pen. Can we just shout out Miss Ville, one of our favorite teachers? Vicky Ville, we love you, Miss Ville.
She's still she's still in Durham.
I do.
Still in Durham. Staple. And you know where Leathers is today.
Hillside, right?
Southern. Principal over at Southern.
I thought he was at Hillside.
He was, but now he's at Southern. Yeah, it's just, but a lot of, so also too, shout out to Miss Bethay. I don't think she's in Durham, but do you remember those senior year joints with Ville and Bethay? And
yeah. But the they like you. She didn't really like me.
Who?
So you can shout her out. But who? She didn't really like me. Miss Bethay.
Why you say that?
She didn't like me.
What makes you think a teacher didn't like you? Like we being serious. Like what?
I knew when teachers liked me and did not like me.
This is interesting. What do you aside, what would tell you a teacher didn't like you?
You were liked by a lot of the black teachers, so especially the black women teachers.
It won't but two.
Two or three.
You had stellar grades. Like you were a brown noser. You kissed all the teachers. Like you would.
No. I had good grades, and you did decent. But like they almost put you right beside me, and you weren't even doing half of the work or putting in half the effort. So and that's what I think about Miss Bethay when African American Studies. I'm like, although Miss Bill taught the class, Miss Bethay would come in, but she almost made it seem like you was the top student. I'm just like,
so that's your problem. So basically, if somebody does not acknowledge you as the best, then that must mean they don't like you.
No. Or you know what bothers me is when people acknowledge mediocrity. Yeah. Because you was okay making the B.
I was okay getting a C. Let's keep it a stack. I was okay getting a C. Let me shout you out real quick.
I remember you used to be like, B, it's not that serious. I wasn't even okay not being number one in the class.
Right. Yeah. I got to shout you out here because peer groups are important. And in retrospect, like I've said this on prior episodes too, like the friend group I had in high school, you were a big part of that friend group. All of y'all had good grades for the most part, except me and Dante.
We all had good grades. I know what you're about to say. Keep going, but I gotta add this caveat. I was not, and still to this day, can't believe I'm getting to say it. Well, no, I'll say it about high school because I'm the smartest now. But in high school, I was not the smartest one in our group. I'm just gonna say it. I was not the smartest one in our peer group.
I know.
Naturally, even with my big brother, my brother and my sister, I'm the oldest, but I'm not the smartest of the three of them. My sister is by far the smartest one. I just would stay up. I would just like, I the effort, right? I just wanted to be. So the reason why, like, I think I am where I am today is because I just don't, I refuse to be outworked, right?
That's a fact.
And if I am outworked, I know it's now time to move on, right? Either to a new role, a new position, a new company. It's when I now am okay being second or not doing the extra to like you don't know because we don't work together, but a Brandon Douglas presentation, right? But you just... No, like my interview decks, I'm saying, like, bro, this role when I got VP, I hired a cartoonist. I'm going to send you my deck. I hired a cartoonist to basically illustrate my whole deck. Like, I remember, like, the chronology. I've been at now 9 years. It was last Monday, 9 years. I had her illustrate my 9 year work of my 9 year body of work. It started at a seed, and each milestone bloomed, like it germinated. Let me say germinated. Each milestone was a germination period till I ain't a tree, but like I'm like a little evergreen, I think. You know,
like a little bush out in Africa somewhere, struggling.
But whenever I stop giving that extra, it's just time to move on. Relationships, friends, you know what I'm saying? But the peer group thing, I wasn't the smartest.
I never said that you were. So let me get back to my point. Look, so what I'm saying is that
you gotta watch it. I've been disrespectful.
What you did do though was you made, like, because I am competitive in that, like, I'm not gonna let somebody just like talk to me a certain way. And like the way you used to like get mad over grades and like flaunt over grades, it just made me at least want to at least try in a couple classes we was in together. It was like at least show them I could do a little bit here or there. And I got to be honest, because I didn't graduate with above a 3.0. I had below a 3.0. I was not a stellar student at Jordan. And if I didn't,
college.
I did well in college. But if I didn't have you as one of the main friends in that group, honestly, I don't know how or where I would have ended up, say, in undergrad. Because
you're not calling out a lot of other friends, but I will say that the trio, really, the Rat Pack, the three of us, me, you, and Brittany, I think we were a balancing act. We calibrated each other in different ways. The way that I was about grades, you were more about socially. And I would say that a lot of cats that I probably wouldn't have hung out with or wouldn't have hung out with me. I'm saying you actually, what I did for you in grades, you did for me on the social aspect. There was a balance in that.
But it's something I need to say to you. And when I get other people on, I'll say it to them. But that's why we got somebody in the building checking out. So when it comes to
no, yo, that's one of my closest friends.
What you want to say to the homie? And look, hey, Al, I don't know, Al, if this your first time watching, but you've been name dropped a couple times on the podcast. I just have to say, go listen to the episode I did with Quan. He name dropped you too. If you just now tuning in,
yeah, you gotta get Al on too, man. He's
facts.
What? I'll tell you, when you think about friends, so Al was the athlete. I actually introduced Al to theater arts, right? I remember I'm the reason he did a little
you gonna take credit. You're going to take credit for his whole blossoming and everything?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. He's put in
it's
the
all
work.
Because of you, right?
No. But he'll tell you. Okay. I introduced him to the world of theater. And now this man is a sought after actor. See, told you. And he's an artist now too. He's a recording artist. You gotta get that guy on to just kind of talk to his journey. Yeah, man, it's all about being conduits and gateways. And I will just say, I am a talker, but hey, can I go refill?
Yeah, go refill. I'm gonna recap some things and let people know where we about to go. So you go ahead and get a refill. I'm gonna go ahead and go solo mode out. If this is your first time watching the G Pod, make sure you hit that subscribe. This dude, Brandon, we're gonna discuss a little more. We're probably gonna get him on for another episode to go into more detail. So far, we talked about what it was like growing up in the West End, what it was like for him personally in the household, some moments from middle school, high school, how black men can talk to, say, maybe other black men who aren't straight and ask questions in ways that aren't offensive, that aren't judgmental. It's been quite a conversation so far. After he goes and gets some more of that expensive wine, we'll have to ask him what he's drinking. I'm sure it costs plenty per bottle. He'll have to give us the rundown. We're going to start to figure out what that pathway was like from high school to college and what Atlanta really did for him as a young adult coming from a city like Durham, because I can imagine that was a big shift, especially at that time in the early 2000s, and be going to a school like Morehouse. I'd like to also hear a little bit more about how he even got thinking about Morehouse. Why was this even an option versus maybe staying in state? Because Morehouse definitely cost some money. I'm also curious to know, like, is the Morehouse experience, well, he's definitely drank the Kool-Aid, so I kind of already know what he's going to say, but I want to know from his opinion, is the experience worth it? Would he recommend it to others? What were some of the biggest values of attending a school like Morehouse versus maybe going to somewhere else if he would have stayed in state? I'd be curious to hear what his personal thoughts are on that. In the short term,
bro, I spilled wine on my white shirt, bro. I'll be back.
Oh my goodness, man. Yo, Brandon, you all right? Oh, wait, come back. I think you're good. Nobody can see that. Nobody can see that. Nobody can see that, man. You good, man. You good.
Crop down. No, bro, I can't do it. No.
Nope. Oh my God. So now he's got to change his shirt because he spilled wine. This is, if you don't know, this is literally who he is. He wanted me to mention that he has textured wallpaper. So let me actually zoom in on his shit, man, because what you see right here, allegedly textured. Now, what that texture is, I don't know if it's velvet. I don't know. I don't know what they call this here texture, but allegedly it's textured. He wanted to have this little bartender, but it's no drinks on the bar. So I don't know why he got that little bar set up with no beverages. We'll have to talk to him about.
Well, so the bar cart is out of scale, so it's too big actually for the room. The new bar cart hasn't arrived yet, but it's all about scale and balance, brother.
Scale and balance. So you say that one is too big for the room?
It's too big for the room.
Okay. Okay. Well,
my partner is one hell of a designer. That's something he does in his spare time, flips properties and stuff. When you come to our home, G, you'll see like everything has a place. And I'm not that I like to take credit for that. That's just not me. But I will say that when you look at it, it shouldn't be the same height. It's actually bigger than the chaise. It should be a little lower.
Than the what? The chaise. The chairs?
The chaise. The auto.
The chaise? How you spell it?
I'll spell it never much.
The chaise? The chaise?
I think you spell it like a chaise.
That's just a love seat. What are you talking about? That is a sofa.
Look it up.
The chaise? So we learned something new, interior decorating, the G podcast, man. Make sure y'all hit that subscribe. So look, Brandon, getting back to what we was discussing here, you said Oprah is the reason why you went to school.
Well, no, she's not the reason why I went to school. I was going to school. So, man, when I coming out of Jordan, I got into the three schools. I got into NYU because I wanted to go to Tisch School of Dance for theater arts and dance performance. Got into Duke, but it was up the street. Got into Georgetown, and I got into Morehouse. I didn't get a lot of money from Duke. I think I got it half paid for, but Duke was like $60,000. I got $25,000, still had to come up. I'm saying that was enough. Mm-hmm. Georgetown. Same thing. New York, man, I just wasn't ready for New York. It was a hard no. My family didn't say no to much. They was like, you are not going to more. You are not going to New York. I would say going up there, because I'm in New York probably once a month at least for work. When NYU, there's really no distinction between the city and the school. Man, coming from Durham, my God.
Yeah.
Good times, but it would have been some bad times. Yeah. So it was a no-brainer when the Oprah Winfrey Foundation stepped up and gave me the Oprah Winfrey Global Scholarship, which basically paid for all 4 years of college and provided me the opportunity to go to Africa every year right before my internships to really do more work exploratory discovery around kind of socioeconomic hardships that students and people were going through, but also similarities between South Africa and U.S. as a whole. So Oprah was one of the main reasons outside of this Morehouse being the mecca, if you will, for creating African-American men at a high caliber when it comes to education, or producing, if you will, African-American men.
So did you get exposed to the Oprah Foundation after you sort of knew you were going to Morehouse, or did you get the Oprah Scholarship and then figured out you were going to Morehouse? No, what was the order of operations?
I got accepted to Morehouse and then they extended it to me.
So it's a scholarship that's through the University of Morehouse, or yes. Morehouse College, rather.
Morehouse College, yes.
Right. It's not a university, yeah. Morehouse College.
Is that? Oh, no, that's not a spot. Okay.
Nah, you should have let it rock. It could have been like a Morehouse tea.
Oh, shit, man. You see, it. Okay, we ain't going to change it again, though. But I just light back on, too.
So that is, like, I got to be honest, man. And I'm curious to hear your opinion as an alumni. When it comes to HBCUs, I do feel like there's this crop of HBCUs that get the bulk of the funding and attention. I don't know if, like, I'm curious, like, in your opinion, like, Morehouse is definitely in that class that I'm talking about when companies
it is the class, but yes, you're right.
What is it about Morehouse in your opinion?
Well, let me just kind of talk. So if you would have asked me this question, man, in 2009, 2010, when I graduated, my answer would have been completely different. I just want to say that, like, historically, Black colleges and universities are necessary, right? Yeah. They are necessary.
Yes.
And the reason they are necessary is because ultimately, at the end of the day, they are the gateway, and they provide a framework for, they are the gateway between historical context and future continuity around what's possible. I will tell you, G, man, coming from Durham, like, I had some, I knew that, like, Black, some of my mentors in Durham went to Morehouse, but going to a school, the incoming freshman class is 773, I remember that number, African-American men. Everyone had a 4.0 GPA or higher. Everyone was valedictorian or SJA class president. On top of that, they came from, I remember in my induction class, when we got inducted to Morehouse, there was this cat who was fourth generation Morehouse man. That means his daddy's daddy, and his daddy's daddy, his great-grandfather. And I'm sitting there in awe. I didn't even know that was possible. I'm the first. I knew it was maybe two generations, the mama, the daddy, and then the grandparents. The grandparents went. Like, that is just, that was unheard. And then I saw the amount of exposure and Black wealth. And I just realized that, like, and this is where I was supposed to be. But I do think that there's a disparity between the well-known HBCUs, Howard, Spelman, Morehouse, Fisk, right? MU, maybe. Hampton, for sure, right? And then everything else, right? Like, they don't exist. And that's not, or they don't get the exposure that's necessary. And I think we are doing ourselves a disservice, because when you think about it from a propensity standpoint, everybody ain't gonna get accepted to those schools. So who's really doing a lot of the work, right? In terms of producing, just in numbers. Now, I could argue some other things, but in terms of just producing black graduates via the HBCU pipeline, it's the other schools that aren't getting the attention. And I think we have to do a better job. I was so indoctrinated on this kind of Morehouse mystique, where it was all about Morehouse, Spelman when I graduated. The older I got, man, if you just come through, if you're an African-American who has a college degree, you deserve to be celebrated. And if you've done that through all of the hardships that comes with through HBCU, because although Morehouse and Spelman and Howard are on the forefront or on the Mount Rushmore of HBCUs, there are infrastructure challenges at HBCUs that I can almost guarantee you did not go through at a PWI. I can 100%, like, you probably didn't have Wi-Fi issues
I went to Winston-Salem State.
You went to UNCG.
I can get into UNCG. I didn't have AC my freshman year.
Well, Winston-Salem State is getting a lot of exposure. You guys are producing talented journalists.
Winston-Salem State has definitely done quite a bit, especially since I've graduated. Campus has grown, but when you talk about lack of institutional support, lack of certain qualities. Infrastructure wise, like, no, of course, that, believe me, state funded black school at that.
I made that connection. My bad. I'm
yeah, you being silly.
I'm not being silly.
I spent a lot of time at UNCG. I'll say that much, but I did not graduate from there. That's a fact.
I want to dive into that though. Like, are you offended, or are you like, why do you bring up that? Like, do you think that like other HBCUs aren't getting enough attention? Or what?
I think that given that you've gone to one of the flagship HBCUs like Morehouse, my experience at a HBCU is from the perspective of Winston-Salem State funded institution, Morehouse College, privately funded. But when I compare even like the experience at Winston-Salem State compared to UNCG and their resources, or compared to ECU or Wilmington, I'm talking about even just locally at the state level, there's a difference. When you can tell that Winston-Salem State, especially at the time, didn't have the same sort of resources in terms of what the campus offered institutionally. When I look at that in the pipeline of HBCUs, I think, especially given this post George Floyd era where there's been this huge push to market to HBCUs and do all these different things.
How he get into it?
Because that was the thing that really, like, COVID, George Floyd, corporate America start saying Black Lives Matter. What can we do to help Black people? Before then, corporate America was not really making those sort of statements, in my estimation.
You touched a sour spot for me right now, man, where we shift the conversation away from HBCUs and more towards corporate America, and I think we probably want to phase that out.
Let me finish my thought. So the reason why I say that is because recently, as I look at the attention that HBCUs are getting, right? What I notice is it seems to be the same circle of schools that seem to get the bulk of the flow of the support and the funding.
But I would challenge you to look at its funding, but is it based on specialties, right? I don't know what the specialty of Winston-Salem State, but I know a lot of the funding that's being granted to the schools, the flagship schools, if you will, is centered around specialties and focuses, right? Technology, journalism, engineering, coding. Like, I just would like, and we could probably do some research, and I will, to make sure. But like, a lot of this funding that we just, like, I know McKinsey, who is it? It's not Bill Gates' wife. Or maybe someone just gave us a big donation.
But it was Melinda Gates.
It was Melinda Gates. It was a lot of money.
She gave a bunch of schools a lot of money.
But I also think ex-wife just gave some money too. Mm. But all of those, they were grounded in outputs that we met based on the caliber of students we were producing. You guys are producing great caliber students too, but where are we penetrating? What industry or sector are we penetrating, right?
Do you think that who the HBCU was founded by makes a difference as to access to resources?
No, because Morehouse was founded by a white man.
Very.
So do you mean alumni?
No, I said founded. Like, because Morehouse, a lot of these private HBCUs and their original ties.
Now I see where we're going.
I'm just curious. I've done a tour of Morehouse College, and one of the things that was like a light bulb when I toured the campus was how it was founded.
Well, it was founded by a white man who believed that African American men should be educated. He was an abolitionist.
What was his name?
His last name was Morehouse.
And who funded it all?
He funded it at first.
Now, from my memories of the
but he did it in the basement of Springfield Baptist Church.
So okay, just the Rockefeller name. Why is that so heavily tied to the beginnings of the university?
Hey, Gerald.
I'm just saying you. That's what I know it to be.
Listen.
That's what I know the founding money to come from. Is that not true?
Maybe for I don't think Rockefeller is associated with Morehouse. So let me go do some
We'll pause and maybe come back to that at a different time, but maybe if it was, because like I don't think Hampton was founded by, say, like a black person, for example. I don't think Morehouse was. I'd be curious. I'd just be curious, like as I just sort of talk through this as a fellow HBCU alumnus here. I'm just talking through some thoughts, like high level. I'm just wondering what your perspective is, seeing how you went to one of those, as you call Mount Rushmore HBCU University.
No, I said if you're putting it on the Mount Rushmore, I don't know. I ain't got percent. I'm just happy people were going to school and getting an education, bro.
No, okay. All right. So tell me this. When you got to Atlanta.
When I got to Atlanta.
Like, when you got to Atlanta, like, and you touched down, what was sort of, like, the biggest adjustment growing up in the West End and then going, relocating
for your freshman year? It really wasn't an adjustment, man. I looked at it as a fresh start. Once again, coming from Durham, I had the weight, I would say maybe self-proclaimed or self-induced, the weight of like being a great example for my brother and sister, right? Mom and uncle are in prison. Dad died when I was in sixth or seventh grade. Grandma had passed away, so my aunt Brenda now stepped up. I was able to create whoever I wanted Brandon Douglas to be, look and feel. Now, I was doing that against the backdrop of walking into a new environment. Everyone was high achieving, had money. You know what I'm saying? I couldn't just be the smart guy, the smart black guy who dressed well. Because everybody fought well, right? We're well-read, well-dressed, well-traveled. Well-read, well-dressed, well-traveled. Something and well-rounded. It's one well I'm missing.
That's like a school slogan, the five wells.
The five wells.
Okay, we learned a little bit about what it be a Morehouse man today.
It's actually substantiated with like actually like shit we do. But I'm saying though, I was able, like, man, I came to Atlanta with a fresh set of eyes. Now I will say there was some reviver's remorse because I felt like I was leaving my little brother and my little sister, but also I was happy not to have the responsibility of being so close in terms of proximity. And then also I was ready to like test what I've learned and what I gained, right? Socially. I was ready, man. I was excited. And then there's this unspoken thing where like, I think I was really leaning into like, okay, think I like girls, but I also know something else is there. And in college where they say that like, you're able to really lean into who you want to be. I walked in, not necessarily first year with an open mind, but I was interested to see the man I was going to grow into. Mm-hmm. I knew that I was not going to return back to Durham. I didn't know that I wasn't returning back to Durham. I know the likelihood was very low, but I knew that when I came back home, at least we can talk about the first time that Christmas break when we came home.
Yeah.
Shit was different. And you said it, man. I got to go get my charger.
All right. Now things had changed and I'm curious. I'm really curious when you got down to Morehouse. Really what I want to know is like, what did you go down there originally thinking you were going to do? Because I know you were thinking about pursuing theater, going more into like fine arts or dancing at the time.
No, I went into finance, man. So I went to Morehouse thinking I was going to be a doctor. And then that biology class wore me out. So I knew.
So you actually went to college with the dream of I'm going to be a doctor.
I did. Before I even get there, let me just tell you the beauty of Morehouse, because you talk so much about it.
I haven't said anything negative. What are you talking about?
So let me tell you the beauty of Morehouse.
It's a great institution.
Amazing. Ducky. Oh, you want to? Okay. Ducky's in here. The dog. So the beauty of Morehouse is that when I left Durham, I was going to make as much money as I could, right? I'm going to be rich, right? So that's going to be if I'm going to be a surgeon, if I'm going to be a broker on Wall Street. It was grounded in monetary gain so I could establish a legacy for my family, but also the family that I was going to create. Right. Sitting at Morehouse, getting to Morehouse, the first session we sat through, they said, look to your left, look to your right. Right. based on the data, the brother that you're sitting next to, one of the brothers you're sitting next to will not finish, right? It should be your responsibility to make sure that they're sitting beside you when you walk the stage, right? And immediately it shifted away from self-interest to community gain, right? Or to community impact. And I will say that I don't know if I would have gotten that at another school or another HBCU. I definitely wouldn't have got it at a PWI. Right.
I think that story is in the pamphlet for all HBCU entry classes, because they told us that at Winston too.
So you're not gonna water down my Morehouse experience.
No, I'm saying now we got that same story at Winston too. We got five stories at Winston too. That's all I'm saying.
You're not gonna water down my Morehouse
experience. I'm not watering it down. Well, I'm shouting it out.
That's how it shifted my motivation from self to other. So I went from being self-centered to being other-centered. And remember, I told you, walking on the campus of Morehouse, a touching base in Atlanta, it was all about me creating someone new. It grounded my purpose back in other instead of self. I will say that's the if Morehouse is done right, should always be grounded in otherness as well.
Okay, community. I think that is a valuable experience for undergraduates, learning how to be a part of a community, understanding the importance of networking, and learning how to build from there. You went into finance. I wouldn't say you work in finance now, so I'm curious, like, you went into finance.
I did for the first, I was at every summer, I was actually the only freshman at Morehouse. This goes back to my Duke connection. So the chancellor at Duke at the time, John Goodnight, was it John Goodnight? Yeah, I just want to make sure. He wrote me a letter of recommendation when I decided I wasn't going to go to Duke, to Morehouse, which I think also played a part of me getting a scholarship, getting the Oprah Winfrey scholarship. But also, he knew the CEO at Morgan Stanley at the time. He said, I'm not giving you an internship. You're going to have to earn it. But I worked at Morgan Stanley all three summers in iBanking. I thought I was going to be an iBanker.
What's that iBanker for people listening?
Investment banking. But when you think about 401ks, hedge funds, when you think about a basket of funds that makes up a 401k, the research, the hard stuff that's done on the back end of figuring out the funds that's actually going to fuel that growth or that package or that 401k plan, that's what iBankers do. Mm. At its simpler form. That's all I got for you, because I'm drinking. Now, so far removed from that now.
Right. What ultimately made you pivot out of finance? We're going to put in that work three summers in a row studying.
The recession, 2009. So I had an offer at Morgan Stanley, man, $25,000 signing bonus offer. And then we got that email. Sorry, sir. You guys can keep your signing bonus, but we were sending all offers for the incoming analyst class this year.
Oh, wow. So this is, you didn't even get a chance to do the first day.
No, I was there. Right. But we didn't get the chance to do the first day. So I'm like, what am I going to do?
Did you relocate to New York for that role?
Yep. You talk about letting you cheat off my papers. I want to say this. Every job that I've had post Wall Street has been based off of my relationships at Morehouse College. Really one relationship. So I had this big brother, and I tell this story all the time. His name is Desmond Mason. I was a freshman taking accounting one. You typically have to be a sophomore, but I went in with all these AP credits. We'll talk about that later. Thank you, Jordan High School. But anyway, I was a freshman taking accounting one. I did decent, but there was this junior that was taking accounting one. And I was, once again, I read everything. I got him through accounting one. We also took accounting two. And he just became the big bro, because I was looking out. I was young on campus. He just became the big bro. When I called him, it's like, man, he was just checking in, like, how was your first day? I was like, man, there was no first day. He's like, man, you have the personality for sales. He's like, my mom recruits for a sales program at AT&T. There's this black woman who is the head of the sales program. They're going to love you. Just trust me on this, right? Mm. I meet his mom. She sees my resume. She talks to me. She said, oh, you're going to be a fit, right? She said, the only problem is it's a 4-week interview process. Because of God, and I think some talent, that 4 weeks was shortened to 3 days, right?
Oh, wow.
And so I was able to get into the college hire sales program or the business development program for finance and sales at AT&T. Fast forward story, I can walk you through all of that. That's how I got to Birmingham and all these other places.
No, actually, I think this is a good maybe like place to start to round out the conversation, because once you get there and go, a different game being played now. Once you enter
but let me just tell you this though. I'll tell you the game, but I'll say Desmond, who, because of my connection at Morehouse and helping him get through accounting, got me my first job at AT&T. Desmond was also at AT&T. Desmond left AT&T and went to Oracle. It's like, man, this software shit, this ERP shit is different, man. AT&T, that's your grandfather's company. I was like, man, I just got here. I'm doing well. He left and went to Oracle. Tried to get me to Oracle. I said, no. He went to another startup. I'm not ready for startups. I was 23, 24. He tried to get me to go there. But when he left that startup, I said, no. And then he went to us. This company, sexy, software sexy. Look it up. No, he said, and you can make the money and it's going to accelerate your career. I did the research and I was like, what? I reached out and he's like, here's the thing. You got to be tight. Once again, it's a 4-week process because everybody want to work at right now.
Right.
By the grace of God, that 4 weeks was condensed to 7 days. I got the offer, one of the first hires that they made in Atlanta, right? So now still, because of the deposit that I made with this guy at Morehouse 15, 16 years ago, literally every job I've had post my Wall Street internship has come because of the relationship that I was able to foster at Morehouse. Whenever people ask me kind of the golden rule of what you've done to stay so long, to be a black man in tech, I will never start giving them the nuggets of success until I shout out Desmond Mason. Because the reason why I'm at is because, well, the reason why I was at AT&T and really any corporate job that I've had post-graduation has been because of the relationships that I made at Morehouse. If nothing else, the brotherhood of Morehouse, the relationships with Morehouse, has given me everything that I've had post-college because of employment. I always just shout out Desmond before I even get into like just telling how I got the world of tech, the money I'm making, and all those other things.
Word, man. Yeah, shout out to that.
Shout out to Des.
Yeah, man. Shout out to looking out and giving brothers opportunity, access to opportunities. And I think this is a good like place to sort of round things out. And when we circle back and have part two, we'll pick up from this point of entering the world of AT&T. It's like the thing about this.
I hated it.
And what it was like living in Birmingham, I'm sure that was a bit of an adjustment, say going from Atlanta to New York to Birmingham. Like I can't imagine what that experience was like, but I do got to highlight what you just emphasized, because I've shared, if I could go back and do one thing over, you hinted at it earlier, and that I am definitely more recluse than anything. Am I just day to day? I don't necessarily go out of my way to, which is interesting because in high school it was a little bit different, but post high school,
not the G I know.
I just haven't had a desire to do mixy things. If I could go back and do anything different in undergrad, I would have been super intentional about networking more, being more in the mix, making sure that I established certain bridges, because I definitely didn't invest that time. And you sharing that story is another just great example as to why it is important for all of us, not just in undergraduate school, but postgraduate school in your day to day. Like when you're around people, don't be shy. Ask questions, like be nice to people, be kind, like look
be nice,
out for
opportunities. But more importantly, I would say be authentic, right? At the end of the day, and we'll talk about AT&T and maybe on the next episode, man, about like how I've been able to really gain sponsorship in my career. Be yourself, right? Be authentic. Like at the end of the day, and I pride myself on this, and I could bring my partner in. I think you could maybe talk to most of my friends. The Brandon Douglas that you see today is the Brandon Douglas that you probably met 20 years ago, G. And it's the Brandon Douglas that shows up at work every day, that shows up in life. I don't change the man that I am based on the man that's standing in front of me. And I think that's really been the key, right? If some shit is ugly, I remember telling the now my mentor and sponsor, and you really need to push those cuticles back. Like you are closing some major business, but those cuticles are in bad shape. At the time, I'm not even a VP. I'm not even a director or a manager. I'm just an account executive. This man is like an area vice president or see. Now he's global president of all of Americas. 9 years ago, we shopped at the same place. I probably should have been shopping there. We have the same haberdasher. But I was like, God, man, those cuticles are really bad. You know what I'm saying?
You got and the same haberdasher? What is a haberdasher?
A stylist, whatever. I don't, we'll talk about that later.
Haberdasher, I gotta get me one of those one day.
This is what I was saying, let's pivot and maybe set it up for the next one. The reason I tell that story is because mentorship is bidirectional, right? Now that we got through this high school, like this beginning shit, now this one I'm gonna start dropping the fire. But this is where, like, this is the last 10 years of my life, and this is where I really, like, I'm leaning in. If nothing else, I want people to understand that mentorship is bidirectional, right? Don't focus on the position, focus on the person. So often we are aligning ourselves or try to align ourselves with people that are vertical to us, right? Above us. Mm-hmm. But the greatest lessons that I've learned from people have been beside me or below me, right? Mm-hmm. And that's how you grow. And my mentor would tell you, although it was vain and it was about appearance, he said, what? I should probably take more precedence in the way that I show up, right? And it's not just about what I'm presenting, it's about also how I'm presenting myself. And then he's like, that's how I know that kid, right, is gonna tell me some of the things that other people are not gonna tell me. So show up authentically yourself and focus on the person and not the position that you're looking to align yourself with.
Nah, man, that's some fire.
I didn't call my second win now. Now listen, now we can really go now.
Yo, so look, we gonna have to make sure, actually what I'm gonna do next time, I'm gonna make sure we start going and then we go live 30 minutes into the convo just to make sure we get a couple drinks in. We'll have a little pregame. Yeah. And when we come back on that part two, we'll dive more into, like we said, these last, what?
We should go ahead and just do next. Let's just go ahead and book next Monday.
All right, bet. Hold up.
No. Maybe not next Monday. You ain't gonna think.
Let me make sure. Hold up. Next Monday. That's perfect, actually. The 26th. All right, bet. You said it, so we holding you to that. The 26th, we going to come back. We going to pick up from here, do part two. If you got questions for this gentleman, you've already heard some of the background. We really going to get into the corporate side of things on the next call. But if you got questions, leave them in the chat. Leave them in the comments. This is the G-Sh Podcast, where we focus on family, friends, finances, freedom, and our future, and everything else. This is the G Podcast. Greatly appreciate y'all listening. This is part one of two. Make sure you tune in next week, June 26th, same time. Brandon, let the people know for sure you're going to be here, because we know how we just let the people know for sure you're going to be here next week.
Oh, really? I'm here. That's really messed up.
Thank y'all for watching.
Thank y'all.
Make sure y'all come back next Monday. We're going to wrap up.